you've worked with and treated these ultra high net worth and highly successful outliers, these, I think right. I heard you say these alpha Wall Street men. What's the common trait? What's the common thread amongst these high performers?
I see isolation. I didn't start this work with that intention. I started my work in a free clinic in Hollywood working with HIV positive transgendered sex workers, people who lived in the margins of society in positions of powerlessness. And I also, at the same time, was working as a concierge lawyer for a super wealthy family. And there was some unaddressed, there were unresolved behavioral health issues. And I realized that there's two groups of human being who lived on the opposite ends of the power bell curve and were suffering from profound isolation and misunderstanding in those positions. The field of behavioral health, the field of mental health, had done a good job of studying people who live in positions of powerlessness and coming up with clinical formulations to deal with them in a very productive way. And yet this other group of people, this group of people who lived in the world in positions of extraordinary power, were suffering from faulty generalizations, right? Sure. We have all of these assumptions about who people of wealth are, and they're based upon negative stereotypes that, sure, a few people of power and wealth manifest, but not everybody, and there's this overgeneralization. And so my work really focuses on addressing the humanness that resides beneath stigmatized labels of other. And the need happened to be in people of wealth, because our society has a very schizophrenic view of people of wealth. We idolize them and we hate them.
Yeah.
All in the same breath. And it's super complicated. And like you, being a curious person, I was like, there's something rich here and I wanted to go deeper into it.
Definitely. And why do ultra successful people feel so isolated?
Because they're viewed as objects to be manipulated. That's the short answer. Because once we realize that a person is a person of wealth, our whole perception of them changes. We think that they're narcissistic, that they're entitled, that they're selfish, that they're mean. And they may be, right? But not necessarily so. It isn't ipso facto. One isn't necessarily with the other. And so I think that's what it is. And there's a biological component to this too, that we come out of the womb dependent upon other people's resources. And we contort ourselves as infants in all sorts of ways to get access to those resources. That doesn't necessarily change. When we think about applying for a job, right? You contort yourself to be the most attractive candidate and to present yourself in a way that is going to manipulate the person who wants to hire you.
Yes.
And so we see this in families of wealth, where the person who controls the resources, the whole family orients themselves around the whole system, the whole family gets oriented around that wealth, often in not such a healthy way. And so I look at myself when I had no business being a lawyer, but I wanted to be a lawyer because of what I thought the power, property, and the prestige that was associated with it. And that in my father's eyes, I would be successful and his investment in my uni would pay off. Now, mind you, I had no business being a lawyer because I don't like conflict and all that. But at the same time, that's an example from my life, and that's what happens. And it's hardwired into us biologically.
Yeah. Do you wonder? I spend a lot of time thinking about how much I am, but also everyone else is dragged versus driven by their behaviors and their goals. We love to think we're so rational, but a lot of the time we're actually just post-rationalizing what our deeper primal desires want to fulfill. And is that also the case for these highly successful people?
Everybody wants to be validated. Everybody wants to be seen and loved for their authenticity. That's hardwired into us. That's who we are. And sometimes when people feel a deficiency in themselves, they overcompensate by acquiring people, places, and things, by like objects. And they have experienced positions of powerlessness where they were victims or they were acted upon. And they were like, I'm never going to let that happen again. I'm going to be at the top of the heap because at the top of the heap, I can control what happens to me. It's brilliant. It's adaptive. So we certainly can't criticize people for that. Once they get to that place, though, then they start to realize that I need to diversify my portfolio, right? So I have all of these external markers of success. I have all this stuff. The stuff then starts to rule their lives. They get three cars, all of which, one of which is always broken down. And of course, they're exotic cars. So it is like they could just take them to the Toyota dealership. They have to take them to the Maserati dealership. And this car, they own a flatbed. It just goes on. And these things that they thought would give them freedom actually come to control them. And I am not here to say that capitalism is a bad thing. I think capitalism is a brilliant thing. And capitalism and democracy, capitalism works in a lot of different political structures. I'm not here to say money's bad at all. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that it needs to be lived through an awareness of self, others, and the planet upon which we're privileged to live.
And if this desire for power, property, wealth, and status is intrinsic to the human condition, then why do people love to try and reject it for themselves and bring other people down? Like we're saying with the ultra successful people, a lot of, we see them, it's black and white. We either love them or we hate them and try and turn them back down. What are the reasons for that? Where's the deeper, what's the deeper meaning, the deeper human behavior behind that?
It ties into Robert Greene's, one of his 48 Laws of Power, which is a brilliant book, is that reject the thing you cannot have. And so there is this, if I reject it, then I'm superior and better than. And I think we're seeing that in our society, in our culture. I just experienced that at one of America's most prestigious universities, where I was invited to participate in this program based upon my work as a cultural competency. And I sat in the week of listening to how I need to be compassionate and empathetic to people who live in the world in positions of powerlessness. And then when I presented my work, I was rejected out of hand as a white, privileged white male. And I was like, this is the hypocrisy here. Extraordinary. and it's cultural hypocrisy. It's like, wait a minute. We know, like through my research, I've identified three cultural markers of people of wealth: isolation, suspicion of outsiders, and hyperagency, which is the capacity to control your world to avoid discomfort. We talk about these human beings as the top 1%, the top 10%, right? So we know that there's a distinct group that has cultural markers, and yet you're telling me that this is outrageous and I can't do it. What do you mean I can't do this? The hypocrisy is extraordinary. I believe that culturally competent, clinically effective mental health services should be made available to every single human being, regardless of their place on the socioeconomic spectrum. So what you're telling me is that I can only provide cultural competent, clinically effective care to people who live in positions of our society in poverty and in the margins of powerlessness. No, that's not going to cut it. And so I think that, and by the way, I look at myself as a social justice advocate. I worked through Greenpeace. I worked on behalf of the environment. And I think that the bottom up, like expecting rich people to do X, Y, and Z, it's not working. By the way, it's not working. The division between the haves and have nots is getting greater. Mm-hmm. My work focuses on creating the healthiest human beings of wealth that we can possibly have. And through that process, then those individuals will understand and be able to use their wealth in ways that benefit them, the people they love, and the planet that they live on.
Yeah. And surely rejecting wealth rejecting the wealth game is just playing another game, which is the status game. You're trying to bring someone down to increase your status in the tribe. Is that what's happening? Is that the dynamic?
It's really value signaling. It's saying that I'm a better person because I'm more compassionate and I'm more of a humanist than you, which I don't get that because then you tell me that my work is superfluous and no, that's not the case.
it's pretty dehumanizing to the people that you're working with if they say it's superfluous, because these are real human beings with real problems. And how do these problems differ between the ultra rich and the quote unquote normal people? What are the differences in problems that these people face?
I think that the two main differences is intensity and scale. So the issues that arise, so say, for instance, a person who's worth, I don't know, let's just say 200 million euros suffers from depression. The intensity of that is larger because on the one hand, there's, in addition to suffering from the depression, they're also dealing with the dominant cultural message that if you have all this money, then you should be able to buy yourself out of any problems. Or you shouldn't have these problems because we live in, if I ask you, fill in the blank, money equals blank, tell me, go ahead, top of brain. You're a clever
student. Happiness, you said happiness.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So if we think top of brain, money equals blank, money equals happiness, money equals freedom, and money equals power. And yeah, that can happen, but nothing is 100% one way. There's a duality. And so then if I'm worth 200 million euros and I'm depressed, then all of a sudden I've internalized this message that I'm really screwed up because I have all this money and I'm not happy and I can't use this money in a productive way to get me out of happiness. And by the way, the most expensive clinical care is not the best clinical care. That I've learned through my experience too. So anybody who's looking for, do not base it on the price of the care, base it on the quality of the clinicians and their understanding of these particular issues. And so that's it. So there, it becomes more intense. And the impact that mental health disorder has, it impacts because there are so many people dependent upon them that they live in these systems, that the negative impact of that, the scale gets increased. It impacts so many people, many more people than on the other side of the economic bell curve.